5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room Radio Show, brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing. Experienced publishers of horror, noir, bizarro, and all things dark in paperback, ebook, and audiobook. You can find us at www.hellboundbooks.com. But first, get your feet up and enjoy the show.
Good evening, one and all. It seems like it's been forever, thanks to the lack of electricity here in Houston. But we are back, and it is the new Panic Room episode 346. I don't know, bloody day it is today, July the 25th. There you go. 2024, possibly. There or thereabouts. Why not? And anyway, you know, I've missed her. It's been a long time, so I'm going to bring straight on. It's my old mate, Xtina. Good evening, Xtina. How are you doing? Yeehaw, yippee-do indeed. How are you doing? It's been ages. I was checking. It's been a month. I mean, we had a bit of a break, and then of course the power we had, Beryl, God bless, the Beryl hit Houston like a fucking World War III, and we were without power for 7 days, which beats last year's record of 4 days. So. Yeah, so no shame. I know you've missed me. I know you've missed me. Who wouldn't? I'm a delight.
I have, yeah. Yeah, no, it does. It feels like it's been forever. And you're right. When I sat down here to do the show, I was like, what buttons? Is everything hooked up right? And where's my mic? It was, very, Yeah, the song is winding down. I'm like, oh, shoot, I got to hit my mute button here so that I can, you know, and I couldn't find that at first. Yeah, it's definitely takes me back to the beginning when we started this, and I really, really didn't know what I was doing.
No, neither of us did. We just sort of got, it just kind of happened. But, you know, after 345 shows, we really should have got the hang of this by now.
Yeah, I think we have. So I can, I was just telling our guests who are in the virtual green room that I still get a little panicked when we have a break and then I wait for you to come back on. I always feel like, you know, one of these times you're just not going to be there and I'm going to have to, like, you know, babble about something. And
unfortunately you're at the mercy of my bladder, and as I get older... you know, if it takes me longer, you know, but I know there's been a couple of times where, due to technical errors, you have actually, and you do well, you know, you don't give yourself enough credit.
But I do sweat, though. I start to sweat when it happens. Like, I think I'm okay about it, but I get really hot and sweaty and nervous. Still, after all this time.
Thank you. On behalf of all the listeners, we thank you for that mental image. Although, you know, you are sweaty and hot and uncomfortable. Right? Again, 7 days in 95% humidity, 100 degrees plus Texas heat. You weren't sweaty.
That sounds awful.
Do you know, it was fun. I got to a point where I couldn't actually remember a time when my ball sack wasn't stuck to my thigh. I was thinking, is this how it's always been? Is this how it has always been? because of course I couldn't wear my more tighter underwear because that was unbearable. So I was wearing my boxers. So everything is just flapping around and sticking to my leg. And it's a good job. It's a good job the kids weren't around. My son went up to Dallas to his girlfriend. My daughter went to. Ironically, she was in Florida, and she was actually cooler in Florida because obviously they had power. But so it was just as well because things were just hanging out all over the place. You know, luckily the dogs don't care. They're used to it. They're used to it. You know, they just look at me like, oh, father, just don't do that.
I am very happy that you are unsticky now and that you have your power back on so we can do the show. Yay!
You know, it is, and I every day since the power came back on, I praise baby Jesus and thank my lucky stars that nothing's sticking to anything right now. So that's great.
Yay!
That is great. Because I would say, I mean, you know, because I would shower because, we managed to, because I had my small generator, which obviously meant that we could have hot water. And I would shower, and by the time I toweled off, I was sweaty again. So it was just like,
that's awful.
But it's one of those things, you know, you adapt. I mean, you have to.
Yeah.
Your priorities change and you sort of adapt to it, and that's that. That's I think this is my life now. This is how it's going to be.
Yeah, we've been watching, we went back to the beginning of The Walking Dead, and those first, first seasons are really good.
Yeah.
But the beginning there, I really would not make it in a zombie apocalypse. I would not make it in any kind of apocalypse at all. Although I love reading about it, but actually I would just be awful at it. I mean, where's the AC? Where's my toothbrush? These people run around, they don't have I can't imagine. I will be no good. No help.
Well,
to
you
know,
this is all they equally. I mean, how many seasons were there?
10 or something.
Not once in 10 seasons did anybody need to go to the toilet, which is great. It's handy. You know, that in a zombie apocalypse, you don't need to go to the toilet, you know, and that probably helps. It's
so
funny, Ash. I have to give a nod to my grandma. God bless her. That was her thing. You know, she would watch a film. She said, "Why is it they never go up the toilet? Why did they never show them go up the toilet?" Well, it's fair common. You know, I mean, it's part of everyday life, I guess. And so some do. I mean, there are some. Although that's probably a hark back, funnily enough, actually, to the golden age of cinema, where they weren't actually allowed to show toilets. I think, if I remember rightly, I think the movie Psycho was the first movie to actually show a toilet.
Charity.
Yeah. Another movie was just shown to show a toilet because obviously in the movies. But no, I mean, every now and then you'll see it. But again, it's part of it's part of the plot, not just part of this is portraying everyday life.
Right.
You know, and I try, and everything I write, I try to work in a lavatory seat. Although some of my books are pretty lavatorial anyway. But if it was true to life, and then you die was literally, it was about a fecal demon, it's actually about poo, you know, but if it was true to life, certainly my life now, you know, you'd be every other scene as Arnie's gone for a week, need a wee. Oh, you know, and it's a running joke now before, you know, me and my daughter go anywhere. You know, I'll just say, you can squeeze one out. I'll just squeeze one out. Because guaranteed, I'll be 10 minutes into the journey. Oh, I wish I'd gone now. You know, we should have had a wee before we left the house, you know.
Well, getting old sounds amazing.
No, it's great. Well, the thing is, I can be a grumpy old bastard and people, bless it. And I'm just... But I'm at that age now where I just don't care what people think. You know, when you're young, you say,
yes.
How, you know, certainly with my grandparents, how, God, my grandma was like, she just say what she was thinking. And now I'm there, you know, I can just, and I really don't give a crap what people think. And it's so liberating.
It's a good thing. Yeah,
it really is. It's brilliant. Especially in this day and age, and all the wokery and all the bullshit. No, you can't say this, you can't say that, you'll offend them, you'll offend... Seriously, if somebody chooses to be offended by something I've said, not my fucking problem. Seriously. I don't care. I truly, honestly, do not care. Nobody ever died from being offended, so get over it. There you go.
I agree.
They're good. Yeah. Well, you know, fine. And that's... I say that, and if I've offended anybody, in the words of the great Roy Chubby Brown, I couldn't care fucking less.
And on that note...
on that jolly note, what have we got going on the show this evening?
I am super excited. I really am, because, you know, we used to joke around that this was the Jeff Strand show, so I'm very excited. Yes. So this evening on the Panagram, we have Bram Stoker Award winner Jeff Strand and two-time Splatterpunk Award winner Bridget Nelson.
Yay! Hello! Hello.
Hi.
Hello. Feel free to join in. How are you doing, guys?
Hello.
Hey, Jeff. Good to hear you again. Hi, Bridget. How you doing?
Hello, I'm good. Thank you.
Good.
So, does anybody have any complaints or any? You know what? I gotta say, James, and I'm gonna throw Jeff under the bus here. We want some better music next week. We are going to band together and take a poll, maybe, to see what kind of jams we can play. Because you know,
okay.
what were you playing?
Okay. Yeah. Fine. Absolutely.
Although, you know, we did have a guest one time that really loved our music and actually wants us to make a playlist available.
Yeah.
So that they, I guess,
we
they
should
can...
do that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
yeah,
honestly, I'm open to suggestions, absolutely, yeah.
Most of the time, I just kind of...
write their own song.
Ooh.
Oh, there's a
thought. I'm not musically inclined at all. That would be terrible. I think... one episode, I sang Happy Birthday to James, and he begged me never to sing again on the show.
Yeah, I think that was like show five or something, and I made damn sure you would never do that again. Good God, no.
It was pretty horrible.
I want to hear the James and Tina duet.
Oh, that would be terrible. We'd have no listeners left, I'm afraid. But, you know, we could do what it hits when it's four. Is it a quartet or something? If all four of us get together and do a song. Now, that would be good.
You want no part of that.
That's not true. Jeff and I do a duet together, and it's really good.
Aw, what song is it?
Night I Laid You Down by Stephen Lynch.
You'll have to listen to it.
I would love to listen to it. I really would. Yeah, I mean, do you have a link to it? Oh, shoot, man, I really wanted to hear it there. You know, I think going to, like, karaoke would be, like, so much fun, but I seriously, I have a terrible voice. When my kids were little and I used to, like, rock my son and I would try to sing to him, he actually told me he couldn't even really talk too much yet, but he put his little finger up to my lips and said no. I mean, that's how bad it was. it's just terrible. So
you do realize that, like, 97% of the people that karaoke can't sing either, right?
Well, you know,
yeah, but that's the fun. You know, it's funny. It's, you know, listen to where I used to live in England. I used to live in York for a while, and the house used to back onto a pub, and they used to do karaoke every Saturday night. And there was always somebody. She always used to be on last, doing the Titanic song, and she was really good. So, but that was boring. It's the shit people that's entertaining. That's what makes karaoke.
And
it's one of those things. I mean, I can't carry a tune in a bucket, and I freely admit that. Mm-hmm. However, you know, it's directly proportional to the amount of beer I drink. The better I think I am. You know, I have about four or five beers, and I'm Sinatra. I am great. I can sing. You know. Although funny, I remember many years on holiday in Greece, and we did karaoke, and I sang Tom Jones, and I actually got panties thrown at me, which was phenomenal. What a great moment in my life. I actually got a few pairs of panties chucked at me. It was brilliant.
No, I have decided that if I were to sing karaoke, I want to do Thunder Kiss 65 by White Zombie. That would be my karaoke song. Yeah, I mean, I'd probably be really awful at it, but I just love that song. So, and if you turn up the music loud enough, you can drown me out. So it doesn't, you know, it's a win-win either way.
So. Thanks for the tip.
right. Well, I figure like you have to have like a go-to karaoke song, you know, a song that you'd be like, okay, that's the one I would sing if I were a karaoke. And you have to have.
Well,
that.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, yeah, I mean, so. Yeah, we'll open this to the floor. My go-to is Mac the Knife, funnily enough.
Love that song.
What about you guys? What's your go-to karaoke song?
I have never done karaoke. When I was almost going to do it, I would have done Punk Rock Girl by the Dead Milkmen, and then I opted to not participate.
Oh, that would have been awesome, Jeff.
If I was forced to do karaoke, that would be the song choice. But Bridget has done karaoke many times. So.
Good choice. You should do it. What about you, Bridget?
I've done karaoke a lot. I would say the song I've probably sung, I think I've sung it twice, is Sweet Child of Mine by Guns N' Roses.
Good.
Oh. It's not an easy song to karaoke.
Yeah, because you can just scream that. You can scream that and sound good. Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Absolutely.
Well, the first time I sang it, I was pregnant with my son. So,
I'm filling up.
I think we should have a panic room karaoke edition, and those are the songs that we're going to get.
We've been talking about this for how many years now? We really should.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I think a lot of shows, they'll do a musical episode every now and then. I remember Grey's Anatomy did that, and I did that one back in the days with my now ex-wife when she used to make me watch Grey's Anatomy, with emphasis on the ex-wife. And suddenly there was this musical episode that So we should do that. You have a musical panic room. That would be fantastic.
It would be. It would definitely be one for the book.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's. We're gonna start with ladies first here. Bridget, you have a new book out. You're here to talk to us about your book, Red Inside. Tell us a little bit about it.
It's my first novella, and it is about. So I saw a cover and I fell in love with the cover. And cover, in case you haven't seen it, is a girl's face. She's bloody. It's a young girl, and there's a like full grown adult tarantula coming out of her mouth. And I saw that cover and I was like, I need to write that story. So it's about a parasitic tarantula that invades a hospital in Duluth, Minnesota, and it goes from there. And it's basically a very Jess says it's very fast-paced, and it basically encompasses just one night at the hospital. So.
You know, I have to say, I love asking our authors where they got their inspiration for a story and stuff, and I love the fact that, you know, a picture inspired that. I mean, with my own writing, you know, poetry, often it'll be something like a picture or, you know, just something quick like that a whole poem will be, you know, written because of. So I love that. I really do. Now, coming up with a story to back the picture, was that pretty easy for you?
So I think it was one of the trips that Jeff and I went on this year that I basically was like, okay, talk me out, help me talk this out. So I would basically throw ideas at him and he would tell me, like, okay, yeah, and what if you did this? And I'd be like, yes, and we'll do this. And it was kind of back and forth, and the story just kind of came together that way. And so I wrote it. I wrote it in like 2 weeks, oddly enough.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I have to admit, the cover does look badass, but because I'm afraid of spiders, it also scares me a little bit. So I'm afraid if I bought the paperback, I would have to, like, face it inward so you couldn't see the spider all the time, or I would think it was, like, you know, crawling toward me or something. I have gotten a little...
Me because
I know.
Usually people who have ball pythons also have tarantulas.
Yeah, you know, spiders scare me. Yeah, and the more times that I go to, like, the Repticons, they have spiders everywhere, and I think I'm getting a little more, like, you know, I can look at them now, and I'm not, like, as wigged out as I used to be, so, I mean, that's progress, I suppose, but...
That's good, yeah, it is.
Yeah, I can't imagine, like you've had tarantulas. Are they something that you can, like, get out and, like, handle and, like, I don't know, like, chill with?
Yes, it really depends on the tarantula. Some breeds are slower, you know, like, that, you know, they'll just hang on your hand and not really move. They call them pet rocks, basically. But some of them are very fast, and I wouldn't recommend getting those out. You know, it's like, because they could literally dart away in no time. So it really, it just depends on the tarantula. But yeah, I held my tarantula. He was a Chilean rose, and I held him all the time. So
interesting.
Yeah, he was fine.
Now that you have a ball python, I mean, for me, the ball pythons are just, you know, you could put them around your neck and you can go, well, not when they're really little, but, you know, it took us a while before ours would, like, grow into that size that you could put around your neck. But now just put them on your neck and I can go do dishes or, you know, do, you know, anything else. And that's pretty cool. And also you can just sit there and chill with, like, a movie or something. And for the most part, they just hang out with you. And I think that's pretty cool. So
that's exactly my goal.
Yes. Yeah. You'll get there. You'll get there with her. It takes some time. Yeah. And so how is Jeff with her?
So I think Jeff has been really intrigued by her. Like, when we first got her, he was going over to her tank all the time and looking in and reporting what she was doing. He has not held her yet. He's touched her, but he has not held her yet. But, you know, he's helped me clean out the tank. He's really good about that. Yeah, I think he likes her. You like her, right?
Yeah.
Well, the funny part is...
she's definitely my pet.
Yeah, we have 4 pythons now, and my husband was not a fan. He did not want... I mean, I don't think he was afraid or anything like that, but he didn't really want to get a snake. And now he has his own. So... one of these days we're going to see Jeff and Bridget both sitting on the couch and they're each holding their own snake, and that's not a euphemism or anything. So.
Yeah, right. I didn't know you had 4. Last I heard you had 3.
Yeah.
Where did you get 4? Well, wow.
Yeah, the white one, that's our 4th baby. It's the white one.
Right,
you've seen pictures of him.
I must have lost count because we have 3 here. I mean, I've got Monty, who I've had since 1999. He's sort of in my room. He's great. He doesn't do much, but they just sort of hide, you know, come out and eat. I mean, I always know he's hungry because he's out and about, you know, but I don't have the chance to get him out as much as... are you? When it was just me and him back in the day, he used to get him out every evening and just sit and watch TV. He used to like a bit of TV, bless him.
Yeah, see, that we went to Repticon last weekend, and there was a snake there that I probably, if I tried a little harder, I might have been able to get talking to him.
Oh, you sent me that picture.
He was
beautiful.
Yes.
Really was,
yes,
yeah.
Yes, yes. But the fact that we have 4, and I don't think we have the enough time that we, you know, to spend with those, we just kind of, you know, I didn't press it too much. But man, that snake was cool. I have to send you a picture, Bridget. It was like, I've never seen these colors before. It was crazy.
It was gorgeous.
It was some kind of like new gene that they had just, but I do have to say that when they mess with the genes and they come out with these new different morphs and stuff, we have kind of noticed that the stranger the morph, the derpier the snakes are. Like for real, I've noticed that. We have the normal Bob Python, and she seems to be, you know, she's got it together there. And then, you know, her little brothers who are a little derpier, and they have really cool morphs, but, you know, I think they're like mothers and their moms and dads are like related or something, you know. So anyway.
I saw in a group that somebody said that all Bob Pythons share a single brain cell. They have to, like, you know, just like pass it around.
Some of them. So I will agree with some. You know, we have one of them, and he's the sweetest one. But when he's over there in his tank, all of a sudden we'll hear like thonk, and we're like, what is that? And he just struck it as like his like heating element. He'll just, you know, out of the blue, like nothing's happening, thonk, and I'm like, what is that? So they are kind of, they're sweet and special, but he did not, nobody passed him the brain gene that day. So, but no, we're going to end up running out of time here if I don't stop talking. So, yes, Bridget, we do have, we have excerpts, and I think you were going to read us a little bit of Red Inside. Were you?
Yeah.
You were, right?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, it's a very brief excerpt, and basically, it's just to give you a little bit of setup. It's so they're in the hospital. The nurses are kind of figuring out something crazy is going on. There are two nurses here that are talking, and they're kind of like, you know, what the hell's going on? So that just gives you a little bit of setup, and this is a Red Inside.
Okay.
That's when I saw something come out of his ear. It was long, segmented, hairy, and had a purplish sheen. What the hell was it? I was horrified. I think it was a spider's leg. He swallowed a big one. I laughed. Oh, come on, a spider? He's the head of entomology at the research facility I mentioned. Yeah, so what? That doesn't mean he has a giant spider living inside him. His specialty is arachnids. I choked on the sip of water I'd just taken. I couldn't get Sigma, his employer, to tell me why he was in Peru. Apparently, it was some top-secret mission. But why would they urgently send an overweight, middle-aged researcher, one who specializes in arachnids, to a remote Amazonian jungle? Fine. Let's say there is a spider inside his body, a large one. What the hell do we do? Are we in danger? I mentioned the possibility to his team of doctors, and they all looked at me like I had two heads. I mean, for Christ's sake, just because nothing with eight legs showed up on his skin doesn't mean it's not in there. Okay. Again, what do we do? I think we keep him away from everybody we can. We can't trust that he's safe. His diagnosis is acute hemorrhagic gastroenteritis, and the plan is to give him fluids, IVs, keep and treat his pain until he's stable enough to be sent home. I shook my head in disbelief. Come on, Bethany, you know how ER docs are. Slap on a diagnosis, write a few instructions, and send them on their way. But how can they just ignore? Once they're admitted, they're another doctor's problem. Healthcare in America, I said gravely, not disputing his claim. Yep. He stood. When does your shift end? I looked at my Apple Watch. In about 2 hours. Shit, me too. He glanced up and down the hallway, then turned black to me. Do everything you can to get him to the ICU. He'll be more isolated there, far fewer people coming and going. I tried like hell to get him sent there, but his doctors refused to believe he was sick enough. I'll do my best, but if they wouldn't take him 30 minutes ago, I doubt they're going to take him now. His condition is deteriorating rapidly. Just keep an eye on him. Of course I will. He's my patient. I'm just a little leery. A scream echoed down the hallway. And I will stop there because that's when the action kicks in.
Oh, my gosh. I want to read the rest, but I'm a little scared just because, you know, spiders are, and especially tarantulas, you know, they have the little, they're furry and they're just terrifying. And you know what? You love tarantulas. Why are you writing a story about, you know?
Oh my God!
Killer tarantulas.
I know, and that's the thing. Because like when I read Clowns versus Spiders by Jeff, I was like, I'm totally team spider. Why did you make the clowns the good guys? I totally told him that. And then I'd turn around and make the tarantulas the bad guys too.
Yeah.
And by afterward.
Wow.
I wrote an afterword, and I like basically tell all the reasons you should love tarantulas in my afterword. So.
Okay. I mean, you know, James, his daughter had the little tarantulas with the pink toes, and they were kind of cute.
Oh, yeah.
They were kind of sweet. They can be funny. Yeah, they were like Bridget said, they were fast. You know, I mean, they were just, wow. I didn't know those things could get that fast. Yeah.
They can be really speedy, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and they cling as well, trying to, you know, they cling onto something, they ain't budging.
Right. We had the scariest 3 minutes of our life one time was when our one snake, Misha, kind of did a disappearing act. We had this pop-up, like, tent that we used to, you know, put her in, and we had, like, a little, we called it her little... enrichment tent, and there were some toys in there for her to crawl over and stuff, and we were watching TV, and all of a sudden my husband says she's not in there, and I'm like, you know, I thought he was just messing with me. I'm like, are you fucking around? And he like tosses the thing in the air, and of course the snake is not in there, and we have dogs as well, so I'm trying to hurry up and get the dogs out of the house because, you know, they could hurt her. But she didn't get very far. She was behind the couch, but it was this three terrifying minutes, but she actually, you know, was just moseying around, just, you know. So I'm glad that they're not, you know, taking your eyes off. That it's not really, it wasn't too deep, so she must have just crawled over it.
So it wasn't like it wasn't enclosed, because I have one of those for Indy too, but it's like you can zip the top of it.
Oh, see, there was no top on this one. And no, it is totally, well, I mean, yeah, there's no top on it, but it's still, you know, the whole thing, it's it was pretty scary. But, and it just took minutes, and she was gone. But she didn't go far. She wasn't very far at all, so that was good. And I have heard, I hate to say this, I have heard that it's not if your ball python gets loose, it's when. Although I don't know if I totally believe that, just because I have to say, I think these days their enclosures are really good about, you know, locking and closing correctly and stuff like that.
Whereas
20 some years ago when I had my first one, it wasn't a locking cage at all, and my snake did get out. But I think that these days, as long as you make sure to lock it, close it, and all that good stuff, I don't really think you'll have that problem. But I did think it was funny. In one of the groups I was in, they're like, it's not if, it's when. And I'm like, oh, God.
Don't say that.
But,
I would be nervous track if Indy got out.
Yes. I mean, especially you got chaos there, too. So, you know, and people always think it's going to be the other way around. Like, the snake is the one who's going to impose this danger. No, we're afraid for the snakes. I mean, you know, I try to tell people the people who, you know, like are scared of snakes, I'm like, especially the ball python, they are pretty much harmless. I'm like, their teeth are kind of like bendy. And I mean, I was bitten once, not by any of our snakes, but I was bitten once. And I couldn't even tell it really happened except for there was blood. I mean, it felt like, you know, maybe some Velcro like snagged me or something. But I was like, oh, I think I got bit, and that was like it. But so you think that they have no arms, they don't have any legs. They are freaking. We are saving these creatures. They are harmless. Anyway, there's my rant for the evening.
Well, I mean, let's be honest here. Chaos is not exactly spelt. I mean, I don't think a snake is going to be swallowing chaos. So.
that's true. But and you know, Chaos does seem like he just would lay there and let the snake crawl over him too. So there is that.
I know.
Yeah.
I think he'd just look at it. Jeff said he would probably like sniff her if she got out and then walk away. Like, he doesn't think he'd be interested in Indy at all. So.
Oh, it's just, speaking of Jeff, he's pretty quiet back there, but he is here to talk to us tonight about his new book, Nightmare in the Backyard. 3 12-year-old girls have a camp out in their backyard, but the fun stops when they discover there's a deadly creature lurking beneath the lawn. So,
yes.
Yeah, tell us. I was going to say, tell us a bit about it, but the tagline right there pretty much says it, huh?
Well, that's pretty much it. It's the second book in my middle grade series. It's the Eek series. And so the books are standalones, so it's like Goosebumps where they don't, you know, it's not continuing characters, not a continuing story. Each one is individual, but it's just fun horror stories for kids.
And, I was going to ask, how do you enjoy writing the younger books?
Yeah, I kind of enjoy all age groups I've written for. You know, there's some stuff you have to tone down. Like with young adults, you really don't have to tone anything down. Whereas with middle grade, you do get to tone down the violence and that kind of stuff. And also there are occasional moments that completely surprise me. Where it's like, oh, you can't have the mayor's walk described as a waddle because that's like you're making fun of the way someone walks.
Oh, wow.
You can't do that when you're trying to sell books to middle schools. So little things like, oh, that word that you use all the time is actually offensive. So, oh, did not realize that. So.
And yeah, I mean, ironically, I mean, you listen to most middle school kids and they would make me blush, to be honest.
That's true. Yes. I was going to say,
I
remember when I was younger. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Jeff.
And I use the word derp all the time, you know, and apparently it is not a cool word to be using.
No?
So I took it out.
Now, what can you use in place of derp then?
I don't remember. I used something with the same impact, but I can't remember what the actual replacement was. I'm sure it was a top-notch replacement.
So, and you have an excerpt for us as well tonight, don't you?
Yes, I do. And this is early in the book where things haven't started to go really awful, and it's the three main characters, Chloe, Avery, and Madison, are sitting in their backyard trying to tell a ghost story. Chloe's marshmallow caught fire and turned into a blackened mess, just the way she liked it. She pulled off the top crunchy layer, popped it into her mouth, and thrust the remainder back into the fire. Avery held up her own perfectly toasted marshmallow. Are you ready for a tale of terror? We should wait for it to get a little darker, said Chloe. Avery shook her head. This tale is too scary for total darkness. You don't want to trip when you run away screaming. Also, no, she pointed to the house. The light above the back door was on, illuminating the backyard. Chloe's mom had insisted on this. It kind of spoiled the mood, but Chloe's protests hadn't worked. I'm ready, said Madison, whose marshmallow had been held a safe distance from the flames and looked barely warmed. Then prepare yourself, said Avery, for the tale of the man with no head. It's like the legend of Sleepy Hollow, asked Chloe. No, said Avery. It's a headless man, but not a headless horseman. Carry on, said Chloe. Avery turned on her cell phone flashlight and held it under her chin. What are you doing, asked Chloe. Spooky lighting. You can't really tell because of the fire. Avery glared at her. Are you going to be like this for the whole story? You know I am. You want a marshmallow in the face? Will it be on fire? Maybe. But no, I'll behave. Chloe ran her fingers over her mouth like she was zipping her lips. Madison raised an eyebrow, then shook her head and delicately removed the marshmallow from her skewer and ate it. Avery turned off the flashlight and tucked her cell phone back into her pocket. His name was Jasper Gale, she began with dramatic flair. He was born with two arms, two legs, and one head. But the luxury of having a head wouldn't last forever. During a trip to the museum, he was walking through a medieval exhibit when he stumbled onto some velvet roping. Unfortunately for Jasper, he knocked into a suit of armor and slice! Its sword came down and severed his head from his neck. His head rolled around for a while before coming to a stop. Ew, said Madison. Jasper was not an observant man, Avery continued. He was so unobservant that his body didn't notice his head got chopped off. So he kept walking, even though he was slipping and sliding on his own blood. The guards and other visitors were terrified and fled, but Jasper kept walking. He bumped into a woolly mammoth, Chloe interrupted. A real woolly mammoth? No, a regular mammoth with a wig. Got it. Eventually, Jasper found his way out of the museum and down the street. and people were so scared to see a headless man that they got distracted, and then they accidentally started walking into sharp things, and suddenly there were dismembered heads all over the place. Heads everywhere. You could barely take a step without kicking somebody's head like it was a soccer ball. Could the heads talk? Asked Madison. It's rude to interrupt somebody when they're telling a story, Chloe noted. Yes, the heads could talk, said Avery. So, yeah, you'd be walking down the street and there'd be all these talking heads saying, ow, my neck, and can you please lower your voice? I have a headache. The city had to hire extra sanitation workers to sweep them up and bus drivers to take the heads and bodies to their homes. Then one day, beware, a ghostly voice moaned. Madison screamed. Avery screamed. Chloe screamed and flung her marshmallow skewer in the direction of the voice. Whoa, somebody cried out. You almost hit me with that. That was a brief excerpt from Nightmare in the Backyard, available August 6th at bookstores everywhere.
You know, I hate it when you guys stop in the middle of something happening. Anyway, yeah. You know, that was really awesome. I was going to ask, you know, I've read a number of your books, Jeff, and they have some really gruesome things in them. So how do you go about, I mean, do you ever have a story that you're, you know, I'm going to write a story for the younger kids and you start it and then go, oh, well, that is just a little too scary or that's a little too gruesome. I can't really do that one. And like, how do you come up with the stories for the younger kids?
Well, the way this works, these are big publisher books. Most of my adult work is self-published, but the stuff for kids is big traditional publisher, which means that I'm going through the marketing department and the editorial board, which means that I'm sending them pitches for everything. So it's like five pitches. It's like instead of here's the book I want to write, it send us five ideas. So then I write five, you know, one-page pitches, and they say, all right, everyone got together, and you're writing Nightmare in the Backyard. Okay, so then it's kind of, you know, chosen for me based on the multiple ideas I've pitched, and it kind of, when I'm working out the premise, I figure out, you know, how disgusting does this book need to be? This is a book basically where they're camping in the backyard and these tentacles start bursting, and the entire book takes place that night, and it's just them, you know, trying to solve the problem. It's, you know, essentially one long action sequence. But if it's tentacles, you know, you can have a level of disgustingness where, you know, if you stab a tentacle with a marshmallow skewer and some green slime pours out, that's totally fine. No one is going to get their head twisted off by the, you know, tentacles. It's not, there's no actual disturbing violence. It's just, it's all fun. It can be a little bit gross, just no one's going to get their eye gouged out by a tentacle or anything like that.
I think it would be really interesting if you had, like, outtakes in the book and, you know, like, you can't, of course, you know, let the children read this part, but, you know, I want outtakes where the child accidentally gets, like, skewered in the eyeball and then you're like, okay, we'll have to cut that scene. Oh, you know, because go ahead.
I don't think any violence got cut from the second book. My book before that, It Watches the Dark, did get, there are a few areas where it got toned down. Not significantly, not where, you know, oh, they've ruined my book. Just little bits of it. Okay, that's going a little bit too far. But overall, it's
right.
The book I turned in.
Now, I hear it. I heard it through the grapevine that there's you and Bridget are going to be working together on a project.
We tried, well, yes, that is true, but not the book that we elaborately plotted out, because we had a long car drive. Like, all right, we're going to work out this book idea beginning to end. We did. We immediately got back, wrote the entire thing out. But this is great. This is going to be awesome. We're both excited about the idea. We can't wait to get started. Then Bridget was asked to blurb a book. And then she reported back, hey, I've got bad news. This book that I have been given before it comes out for a blurb is our exact story.
What? Oh, no. Oh, no.
It's like, well, can we, like, we can just change things, right? No, it's the same book. It's the same. Like, well, we'll just keep our premise. No, write it. No, this is the same book that we plotted out. There's,
oh,
we
God,
can't
that's
save
horrible.
It. So I was like, ah. He's like, well, is the book any good? Maybe there's stuff. And I was like, no, it's amazing.
Right.
It's fantastic.
Right.
I was like, ah. So that idea has been flushed down the toilet, and so we're going to come up with something else. So there will be a collaboration, just not the one that we put so much work into.
That is a great story, and you know I'm going to be like watching to see what comes out soon, or you know maybe a, something that Bridget has blurbed for, and I'm going to be like, oh my God, that's it right there, just because it, that's a great story. I love that, but yeah, that is pretty sad though. But I'm sure you guys will come up with something amazing.
Yeah, we're.
You know, you have written together. You wrote a short story together. How was that writing together? Your styles that complement each other? Yeah.
I'm going to say it's fun. I'll let Bridget answer.
So it actually was fun. Basically, Jeff would start something, and then he'd say, okay, this next section needs to be this way. And I would write it, and he'd say, no, you didn't get the comedy right. And
oh,
we would take out my what I thought was hilarious. We would take it out, but at the end of the day, I recognized that he was correct. Like the stuff that I put in there was a little too like goofy, you know, for the story. So, yeah, it was actually a lot of fun, and I don't mind, you know, listening to him somewhat because you know, he's done this for a while. So it's like I'm willing to like let him lead the way in this, but yeah, it was actually a lot of fun, and we breezed through Mac and Millie, so, and I thought it was a really fun story, so.
I don't think that everybody can work well together. I think that if, you know, James and I tried to write something together, we'd end up not talking at all anymore.
Absolutely. It'd probably be an incredibly bad idea. Yeah.
But, I mean, we used to do those stupid little live write things that they would, you know,
well,
occasionally
you know,
certain
we,
stuff.
We did
all
right.
Fun.
Yeah, we managed to do that without falling out too much. Yeah.
Yeah, they were fun. There was, like, no pressure. You know, nobody really cared if, you know, a ton of people said, oh, great job. We didn't really care. We just showed up and had fun. So it wasn't too bad. But anything serious and... James is way too, you know, he's up at like 6 a.m. and I'm just, you know, that's when I'm getting my best sleep is about 6 a.m. So, yeah, nothing there would line up very good.
Well, I will add it's not through choice. It is with having children that have to get
well,
to school.
Well, I had children too, and I just was like, you know, the way to school. Oh, gosh. So what is, we just have a few minutes left here, but so Bridget, what are you working on now?
I just finished up a couple of short stories for some anthology invites. And at this very moment, I'm actually working on blurbs and forewords that I owe various authors, including you.
I wasn't going to bring it up. But
Now you mention it.
No, I'm working on it, I promise. As far as writing, I'm just working on, Jeff and I are trying to figure out what we're going to be collabing on, and I'm finally starting the writing for the Dead Girl novelization that I'm doing. So that's kind of where my interests are going to be, you know, for the next few months I'm going to be focusing on Dead Girl, so...
I follow you guys, you know, on Facebook, and you guys are always going somewhere, and it's amazing to see. But do you guys get any relaxation or any time to just chill around the house and read a book or something? Or I don't see that in your future.
No, the next few months are going to be insane. Like. Insane.
Oh,
we have stuff almost every single weekend. Like, we're going to be driving thousands of miles. So, so for the next few months, probably not going to be doing a whole lot of writing. But, well, at least until through October, probably. But then after that, we have the whole winter. We'll be snowed in Duluth. So I figure we'll get a ton of writing
romantic.
Done. There. I know,
definitely,
doesn't it? I'm kind of looking forward to it.
It does.
But, yeah.
And Jeff, what about you? What are you working on?
I'm working on multiple projects at once, but the main one is Bloodsucker County, which is basically an adult novel, vampire novel, lots of gory, bloody fun, lots of action. So that's just I did Creep Out, which was kind of slow, creepy kind of thing, and so I wanted to go back to something closer to demonic, which is just, it started right away and goes through the entire book. But speaking of our travels, we will be in Knoxville. So we won't be in your hometown, but we'll be about 2.5 hours away. So if you had a hankering to come to Knoxville in September, we'll be there.
We'll do lunch or dinner or something.
That would be awesome.
Or we'll come over
to
your scary dog collection.
I just, you know what, they just released two more, Spirit Halloween did, and I have sent the links to my aunt and my husband because I'm like, hint, hint, you know. We're getting close to being out of time for the show, so let's start with Bridget, and let us know where we can find you online.
You can find all my social media links on my website, including my Big Cartel link, which is where you can get all my books directly from me signed, if you like, at www.bridgetnelson.com.
Awesome. And Jeff?
I'm at www.jeffstrand.com.
Awesome. Very nice and tidy there. Thank you so much, Bridget. Thank you so much, Jeff, for coming on the show. And I can't wait until we can do it again. And next time, we'll do it for a whole hour and a half just because I have so much fun and I had so many more questions to ask. So we all...
And we need to fit the karaoke in as well. So we need to schedule that. So get practicing, Jeff. Get practicing.
Thank you so much, and I can't wait to have you back on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys. Have a good rest of your evening.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
I love them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that went by far too fast, but unfortunately, time has beaten us again, and it is time to say goodnight, Xtina.
Woo, goodnight, Xtina.
Good night.
Some things in life are bad, they can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps, just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. Hey.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life.
For life is quite absurd, and death the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death. When you look at it, life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show, keep them laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side of life.
Always look on the right side of life.
Come on, Brian,
from nothing, you're going back to nothing. What you lost?
Always
nothing!
Look on the right side of life.
Nothing will come from nothing, you know what I say? Cheer up, you old bugger. Come on, give us a grin. There you are. See? End of the film. Incidentally, this record's available
always
in the foyer.
Look on the right.
Some of us gotta live as well, you know. Bernie, I said, they'll never make that money back.